Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Hello, and thank you for joining us. This is the Sprocket Podcast, and you're listening to a special summer edition. Today, you're going to get an interview with Stacy Bisker, who is the mother of the family known on the internet as A Simple Six. She joined us to talk about her transition to bicycling as a lifestyle and what it's like to be a bicycling family in an eastern United States town. We spoke on March 20th in 2012, just a couple months back, and this is the interview that we recorded.
Hello.
Hey there, how's it going?
Wonderful.
Excellent. Well, hey, how much time do you have here? I want to make sure that take care of your schedule and all that. I know you've got kids that you might need to get back to, I guess, and all that.
No, Brent came home. He cleared his schedule just so I could talk to you.
Oh, well, that was nice of him. And yeah. Brent is your husband, and that's the rest of the kids, right?
Yeah, he has the four children upstairs, and it's about 85 degrees today.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're probably out back.
I was going to ask you about the weather, even though that's kind of a pedantic subject, just because you guys are on the other side. You're in, is it West Virginia?
Correct.
Yeah. And it's certainly cold and chilly, and it's been emotionally draining, I think, on all Oregonians for the past couple weeks. So it's nice to know that somewhere people are getting better weather.
Well, better weather is relative, because I could do for some snow and cold right now.
Gotcha. Well, that's great. How long have you been listening now?
Well, probably only a couple of months, but I don't listen to everything. I kind of am selective with my time. So I kind of jump in and say, oh, I've got a little bit of time here, and I'll tune you guys in and see what you're up to. And I'll go through, you know, the archives and pick something here and there. And I get interrupted about 20 times during your 5 to 1 hour session, and I have to keep going back, but I do my best.
Okay. Well, thank you. I do. It's nice of you to listen. And I know we're not like the most family friendly program. I mean, we try our hardest not to be offensive, but we have some colorful language in there. So I can understand it's probably hard to get through a whole episode if you're trying to protect your kids' ears or something.
Well, it's not protecting theirs. It's mine. I can't hear you and them at the same time. So they haven't, not all of them are attuned to all the things that are going on around them. So I don't worry too much about the language. If it was a visual, they'd be glued to it.
Gotcha.
And there's nothing for them to see, no glowing screen.
So. Okay. So we will never start a live stream, a video podcast. We'll never do that.
If you did, there would need to be, some disclaimer there.
There we go.
No, one of the things that was really exciting was when I looked at the Rowdy Kittens piece, I was able to go to her blog and see what she had done with you at her tiny house. So having the visual and the audio was like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. And then I did the same. I guess you had posted some pictures when the woman from the Critical Mass episode was on, and I really appreciate having both sides of that. So it really makes it all feel real.
As real as it is on this end, hopefully. I mean, obviously a picture can't tell you everything, but as they say, 1,000 words and all. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
And those are all great people too. They have some good stuff going on. The tiny house is just as cute as it looks in the pictures. Maybe even more so when you're there in person. So, yeah.
Certainly.
Why don't you introduce yourself? This is Stacy Bisker, and you are, is it Bisker? Is that the right pronunciation?
Correct.
All right. That's one of the ones that's probably harder for me to mess up, but I have a long history of doing that. You guys are in West Virginia, and the website is asimplesix.com.
Correct.
And you're also on Facebook, and are you on the Twitter as well?
I'm on the Twitter.
Yes. All right, there we go.
And I have a personal G+ account as well.
Okay, right. Yeah, there are so many ways to be connected these days.
Yeah.
So you guys, the basic conceit of what you've got going in your website is an explanation of how it's possible to live in West Virginia with 6 people in the family, and that's 4 kids, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So you've been doing this this low car thing for some time now. How did you get started?
About this time last year, we were. I guess everybody does it. You go through times where you're like, okay, there's another bill. What are we going to do about this one? How are we going to do groceries this week? the kids want this, my husband wants that. You feel like you're spinning your wheels. And I get a little frustrated with the concept I can't control my own life. You know, like somebody else is telling me how to spend my money and where to live. And I've made all these choices along the way. And so I get to about April last year and I'm like, okay, something's got to go in our financial life. And I decided it was either going to be the house or the car. And so I said, well, let's see what we can do. We started getting the house ready to sell, to put it on the market. Cause if I could reduce that expense, that would be, you know, a huge chunk of change. And then I said, well, okay, while we're doing that, what else can we do? And I said, well, here's something. There's $400 car payment and $250 in gas and $140 in car insurance. And okay, this is just crazy. And where are we going? Like, what are we doing with our time and our vehicle? So last, about April, we started seeing where we could go and walking when we could and biking when we could and driving when we had to and consolidating errands. And everything sort of moved forward from that point. And we started reading about other families. And so we couldn't be the only one. What is everybody else doing in the world? How are they getting around? Do they have good transit? Do they have families that are helping them? Do they live in communities where they walk everywhere? And so we borrowed a bike trailer, put our children on bikes. My husband got on a bike. And, you know, it was very, very, very scary at first.
And I can imagine, I was just thinking, if I'm not mistaken, I was just giving your website the cursory glance over, and I haven't dug deep into what you've been writing, although you have plenty of great writing up there. But yes. It looked like what you were saying is that where you live doesn't necessarily have wonderful bicycle or pedestrian infrastructure. Like, it's not necessarily oriented to that. So was that part of the...
Yeah, because we didn't know anybody who was writing. We knew two people who bike commute to work. My husband was like, whoa, how do you do that? And I'm like, we just do. They didn't take their kids out and their wives didn't ride. And if you saw children on bikes, they were at the park. They were not on the streets and they weren't going to the schools where we were going. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any bike lanes. We've got a small neighborhood that has some share the road signs. Now we have, a city who is trying really hard to build that infrastructure. We have a bike path that's a gravel trail that you can kind of recreationally ride, but it's not very utilitarian. You're not going to go to the grocery store on that bike path.
Right. So it's all very recreational. Yeah, definitely.
It's very, what's there is recreational. And everybody we knew who's riding was, you know, they weren't going very far. They were riding on the sidewalks. You hear stories about getting yelled at. You never heard stories of accidents because there weren't a lot of riders. We had two bike shops at the time. We had been into one. There were a few kids' bikes, but there were no bike trailers, no bike seats, nothing to show you that you as a family could ride.
Okay.
So now we have two different bike shops. One's the same as you. And I just decided, well, I'm not going to allow any of that to hinder me because we live in a very flat town for West Virginia. It's right on the river. Ohio is a mile and a half down the street, and Kentucky is 13 miles in the other direction.
Okay.
So it's very flat along the river, but there are hills, neighborhoods that are hilly. So that was a big deterrent. I think hills sort of impose a lot of fear on a lot of people, especially if you've never ridden a bike.
Definitely. And it seems to me like a lot of the places, there are certain cities that do it very well, especially the cities that are on, you know, totally flat land and there are no hills. That makes it pretty easy to ride. But there are also towns that, like, most of the commercial landscape is the flat stuff. And most of the developments tend to be more in the hilly areas. Like the place I grew up in was kind of like that. So is that kind of what you have there?
No, that's what's interesting. I'm surprised the whole city isn't on bikes because one of the most notorious neighborhoods in our town is called the South Side. It's completely flat. And they have sidewalks, which is something I don't have in my neighborhood. And that sounds funny, but around here, sidewalks are hard to come by in some neighborhoods, and then they're prevalent in others, or they're not in good shape. And that has to do with an economic, there was a boom in the 50s, and then that boom, you know, everything vanishes, industries vanish. And so a town was built to support 50, 75,000 people. And then all those people left and we are now at about 40,000 people. And so you've got the tax base of 40,000 trying to support a city that was built for 50 to 75.
Right.
So there wasn't enough to maintain that infrastructure. So, but like I said, there's definitely a huge shift. And I don't know if it's because I'm now a part of that culture that's developing that I'm noticing it, or if my attitude has changed, or if there really is a genuine transition happening with the people and with the government, and a combination of all of those things coming together. But it's very exciting to be here right now and see all that grow.
Well, tell me a little bit about how you guys, how you transitioned out from like one pattern of life to the next, because right now it seems like you've got, you do own a car, but you don't use it too much, but you guys are going all over town without, the aid of the car.
Absolutely. The town's not very large. So like today I did, almost 7 miles, and I covered and went everywhere I needed to go. I mean, I passed by schools and parks and shops and libraries and the grocery store, and saw the river and everything was there within that 7 mile round trip, and found friends, and the news people were out filming, and the dogs were running. It was everybody. So the town's not very large. I'm able to live in a radius, not really a radius, cause it's a long, about 4 to 6 miles wide to 2 miles deep. So that's everything I need is within that space. And I would say 97% of that area is flat. There's a couple of places I can't get to by bike. So it's been, we drive if we need to or have to, very rarely do we ever want to.
Sure.
But the transition itself happened very gradually, you know, getting the right bikes and figuring out where we could go. And over last summer, I cut back to driving one day a week. And then my husband left town and I said, okay, well, he's gone. Let's see what I can do without him with four kids.
Right.
Take off. Where can we go? What do we want to do? And it was a gradual step. And I started writing everything down and figuring out why I couldn't go somewhere and what I wanted to do about it. So then in August last year, I decided to do a trial car-free month and try to solve all my problems without getting in my vehicle.
Hmm.
We had two times where we drove. One was the first day because my husband was attuned to this. Well, my daughter, she's sick. She has a fever. She doesn't want to walk. And then he put her in the car and took her over to the walk-in clinic, which is funny because it's a 5-minute walk from our house.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you had to drive there to get there. Yeah. Like there was no safe way to walk there.
No, there is a safe way to walk there, but his mentality to say, well, I'm going to drive her.
Oh, sure. Cause that's the fastest way.
Cause that was going to be the fastest way. And yet we knew it was a 5-minute walk, but she's too heavy. She's 100 pounds. You can't carry her.
Right.
Or she's too big for a stroller. I mean, at the time, we didn't have the cargo bike. So since then, when we've had situations where the kids are not feeling well enough to transport themselves, we just put them on the back of the Yuba and take them over.
There we go.
Yeah, so that's been great. There was the other time I drove during that 1 month was my 70-something-year-old grandmother took the Greyhound down from Columbus, Ohio to Huntington. We're very fortunate. We have an Amtrak station here. We
there
have a Greyhound line, and we have an airport. So I never felt like we were disadvantaged for transportation.
That's
so
good.
My grandma comes down and she spends the week with me, and she was going to take the Greyhound back, but the whole time she was here, she wasn't up to her usual self. She's a lot slower. The children overwhelmed her more.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Grandma, you know what? I don't think you need to take the Greyhound home. How about I drive you back? So I drove my grandma back, but because I don't really like to even walk up and down my own steps without taking care of two or three other things when I go in that direction. I went ahead and stopped at 3 different bike shops in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Did some bike shopping because at that point I was in my research phase. I'm like, this, I love what I'm doing. I love riding, but I need to be able to ride with my 4 children. And the setup we had wasn't ideal. It was okay.
So what did you start with then? Because you mentioned a Yuba is what you have now?
Yeah. We have a Yuba Mundo right now.
Okay, and those things are beefy. Those are built to carry like whatever it is that you need to carry, the Yuba can do it. What did you do before?
We had a mountain bike that my neighbor, it was in horrible shape. And I apologize because I don't actually know all the names of the parts on the bicycle.
So that's okay.
I get really intimidated when I go into a bike shop and like, how can I help you? I was like, I really don't know what I need. But let me draw you a picture. I think it was the crankshaft was bent, and I walk into the bike shop with this box store mountain bike that had shocks on the front and it was kind of purple. And I say, I need you to make this rideable.
Make it go.
Says, Yeah, he says, I can't do that. It's not worth it. And I said, well, yeah. I have $100 I can give you to fix this, or I walk. Uh-huh. You know, that's all I've got. So he calls me back like 30 minutes later and says, okay, for $50, I can replace this and bend that, and you will have a bike. I'm like, great, that's what I'll do. So I rode that and put the kids in a trailer that my friend gave us. And then the other two children rode independent. They had bicycles already, and they were able to ride independent. That worked, except for pulling a trailer up a hill, you're kind of getting like a backslide. Like that trailer's trying to tell you, you're not going to do this. I'm going to keep pulling you backwards.
Right. There's a lot of drag and a lot of gravity.
There is. And that was not fun. It was hard. And the mountain bike wasn't the right size for me. And it was a very hard bike to get along with. But that's what I learned on. And I didn't know anything different. And then my husband buys a new bike. And I get on it. And I'm like, whoa, this is light and fast.
So what did he get?
He ended up with, I don't even know. It's a black mountain bike.
Okay, sure. But it works for him.
It's a 29er. I know that much. Nice. Yeah, I think it was more of an impulse buy, because now a year later, he wants to sell that and buy a proper commuting bike with a chain guard and fenders.
Chain guards are great, especially, do you guys get much rain there?
It depends, but okay. Yeah, we get a modest amount of rain.
Yeah, so. Chain guards are great, because then you don't have to tie your pants back every time you're going to hop on the bike to go somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't like riding his bike because I don't tie my pants back and they get caught in the chain wheel every single time and right. They tear up and then I get all greasy and it's, you know, well, I can deal with that.
So. Right. I wear black pants just so I don't have to deal with the grease as much. I mean, it's still there, but I can hide it.
Yeah. So I rode his bike and I'm like, oh, this is not right. what are you doing to me? So, but I'm not going to, I don't impulse buy. So I did all this research, test rode a Yuba at Paradise Garage in Columbus. And my dad came with me. He met me over there. And I test rode a Madsen at Handy Bikes. And they had a Kona Ute electric bike up there. And it just was too heavy. I didn't even ride it. I picked it up and went, I can't handle this bike. It's too much
bike. You have to be able to wrangle it yourself.
Yeah, I had to be able to handle that bike. So I test rode the two bikes. I was prepared to offer, you know, that bike shop cash to walk away with that Yuba that day because I knew it wasn't going to be in Columbus. They wouldn't sell it to me. Uh-huh. It was their store shop bike. That's what they were.
Oh, yeah.
They'd have to order me one. I'm like, you know, if you got to order me one, I could order one down, you know, in Huntington. That's, you know. So I slept on it, thought about it some more. Went to my local bike shop and said, this is what I want. They'd never heard of it. I said, can you get it for me? Cause it's going to cost me the same if you do it and you get your, you know, your kickbacks, or I can do it directly from Yuba and, they get, you know, they get all that. So, and I wanted to support our local bike shop. He, you know, just opened up. So he said, sure. He ordered the bike for me, got all the accessories I wanted. And then they ordered a second one for the shop.
Nice. So you kind of got them into the whole cargo bike thing.
Well, I hope so, because that bike's still at the shop. I keep thinking, you know, if this were Oregon, someone would have snatched that up, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess there are just enough people that want to try that out here that, you know, you'll see them move from the store. It's probably harder to convince someone that they need a big bike over there.
It is harder to convince people they need to ride at all.
Right.
Because what they see are people riding for exercise.
Mm-hmm. You have the spandex and the racing and all that stuff.
Yeah, and that's all well and good because they're out there showing us where to ride and that it's safe and that we can go places.
Right.
But you don't see a lot of people riding in our neighborhood. No one's riding to school. In the Southside neighborhood, people are. But they're also the only school in our county district that has bike racks. So, you know, there's nothing there that shows you should be. There's no bike racks at the grocery store. Well, I did find one just recently. There's no bike racks at the schools. Your friends and neighbors are not. And I guess I got an email from, I believe it was Colville Anderson, who writes the Copenhagenize.
Oh, right. And, yeah.
Yeah. And I was talking about people who, that Huntington in 2008 was declared like the most unhealthy city in America.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not sure who has that status in 2012, but you know, we kind of hung on to it because we had Jamie Oliver came here and he did this whole spiel and tried to, you know, make our, we have a Huntington's Kitchen, which deals with local produce and tries to get people to eat healthier. So we got this mentality here that We've kind of had this national stigma that we're a very unhealthy city. And I asked, you know, when it comes to people who are overweight, why are we not, those people aren't on bikes? And he emailed me back and said, had to do with that societal mirror, that if you don't see people who look like you doing what it is you want to do, you are less likely to do it. Hmm. And then cyclical. So if you don't see mothers with children riding bikes, you're not going to take your children out there either.
Right.
And my husband didn't see other people that he worked with riding bikes or people with laptops transporting them safely to school. He wasn't going to do it either.
Sure.
So kind of that was me going, you know what? They're doing it in every other city in America and they're doing it all over the world. I'm going to do it here. And so I'm hoping that I can be that mirror for someone.
Yeah.
That someone else can say, well, they're doing it. Look what they're, you know, they've got their little kid on that iBird on the front and their son's riding next to them. And they got their groceries today and they went to the movies and why can't we do it too?
Totally. Speaking of convincing, you were talking about convincing other people that it's safe and fun and, you know, useful to ride a bicycle around their town. Did you have to do convincing of your husband or your kids? Did anybody resist, or was it pretty easy to convince them that this would be awesome?
There's a lot of us, so there's a lot of different answers for that. My husband was very, very happy to ride his bike anywhere. And he will go to the store and he will go to the grocery, he will go out to eat, he will go to work, he'll go to the library. But when it comes to bringing our children with us, he's a lot more reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very concerned when I go out with our children, he is not present. So that has been really difficult to convince him. We are okay. We are doing the best we can. We're being as safe as we possibly can be, that your children are competent, that this city and the drivers are not out to get us, that we avoid major thoroughfares, we cross streets safely. That's been very difficult, but that might be his nature.
Sure.
You know, just as a father and being very anxious, he's watched them. And it's not just the biking, it's anything. Like, recently we had an ER visit. My husband was in New York City with my daughter and my son got into an accident, crushed his finger and broke it and lacerated it. And there was an ambulance involved. And and that was on my watch with three children away from home on our bikes. Mm. And of course my husband is sick to his stomach, has to go back to his hotel room and he's really, really worried. And I'm like, there's nothing you can do.
Just kind of nervous from the other end. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm sitting right here and there's nothing I can do. So just that anxiety. But that's, you know, that's a good thing and a bad thing. Convincing the children, my 2-year-old walks around with a helmet on all day. He hears about the word bicycle and he's ready to go. His best friend, Ada, who's a little younger than him, she came over to our house yesterday and was napping in her helmet. She wouldn't take it off. She wanted to know when we were leaving on the bike ride. My 5-year-old has no desire to learn how to ride. He is smart enough to say, hey, that's hard work, and I still fit on the back of this bicycle.
Right. If I can get a ride, I'm going to take it.
I can get a free ride. That's what I'm going to do. But he's great with that. He's okay to sit back there and hang out and play games with his brother.
So he's going to have to learn eventually, I guess.
I guess I can still transport my 10-year-old who's 100 pounds, so he probably has 5 more years.
Sure. Yeah, before you, that's kind of like it's kind of like when they're 18, you say, go get the keys to your own place. I guess when they're 10, you say, it's time to start riding your own bike.
It's time to start riding your own bike. He'll get out there and play around a little bit. And I think if he had more friends his age who are riding bikes, he might be more apt to do it. But right now he doesn't, so he's good where he is. My 8-year-old loves to ride. He likes the challenge. He likes the physical activity. I noticed today he was hopping his bike. Like, we're riding down the street and I hear clunk. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm just trying to see if I can jump it. And he's like picking the entire bike up while we're riding and like popping it down the street.
He's going to be a cross racer someday then.
He might. I got to watch out for him. He did critical mass on Friday. It's a 6-mile trail, but, you know, add the mile to and from, 8 miles on a single speed. I don't know what he has, like a 20-inch bike.
Right. Was that with like a back pedal coaster brake and that sort of thing? It's nothing special.
Coaster brake and a single lever. And I'm like, wow, I would have given up a long time ago.
Yeah,
he's
for
got
sure.
it in him, and he gets home and he's ready to do some more, and he really likes it. My 10-year-old is probably the the hardest one to convince to do anything. And it's not just the cycling. I didn't get to go to the store for like 4 days because this, that, and the other. And then last night I'm like, okay, we're going. We're all going to the grocery store. It's beautiful out. Let's go. She refused to ride her bike.
Just said no, not having it.
She would not. She was crying in tears, yelling. And you can't. And, you know, we try to convince her and you try to talk her into it and tell her you throw in a few brides and anything. And it wasn't necessarily entirely the riding. It was, I don't like what I'm wearing. It's 85 degrees and it's hot. I don't have the right shoe. You know, it's sort of, I'm going to find something to complain about.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I had an experience kind of like that. It was like I was totally upset, but my parents didn't realize it. It wasn't, you know, for the reason that they thought I was upset. It was because I had to wear my white slacks or something.
Yeah, exactly. And that was her. I don't want a dress. I'm like, put on something else. Well, I don't, nothing fits. Then, okay, go through all your clothes. And yeah. So I told her, okay, if you think you're hot now, you can go sit in the backyard in the sunshine the entire time your dad's at the grocery store. So Brent, you know, took the kids and went to the grocery and I let her sit outside in the sun until she calmed down. And then her next excuse was, well, there's nothing to wear. So, okay, go through your entire wardrobe. So I made her sort through all her clothes and find things she can wear and can't wear. Then her next excuse was, I didn't have shoes. So today we took her shoe shopping. I'm like, I will do the best I can to engage her in cycling. I got her the cute helmet. I let her put stickers on her bike and she's shaving the rust off of an old Schwinn cruiser bike.
There you go.
I let her bring her stuffed animals and put baskets on it. And I let her pick destinations because, you know, two nights ago, I said, okay, Lennon, we're going for a ride. And I wanted to go check out this house for sale in the neighborhood. And we just jumped on two bikes and we headed over there and we get there. And she was like, that's it. We're not going to go anywhere else. I want to keep riding. Let's go downtown. I'm like, I didn't bring my wallet or my ID or anything. This is not the time to say, let's go downtown.
Right.
So she's 10 and she shows it in every way.
There you go. So I suppose at some point your kids are going to develop the curiosity about motor vehicles. And there's the big rite of passage when they turn 16, you know, they get their, is it 16 in West Virginia as well? Or you get your driver's license?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not from here. I didn't have to grow up in that community, but, I assume so. But when I was little, I learned to drive much younger because we had a half a mile driveway.
Oh, sure.
You know, your parents are like, hey, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You know, you work the steering wheel, I'll work the pedals, that sort of thing.
Sure. And I learned to drive a standard, you know, long before, you know, kids these days don't do that. They'll probably take to it.
Right. I guess you're still a few years out from there. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how people negotiate that. I've been curious because like one of our former guests and one of my favorite authors, Joe Kermaski, the Metal Cowboy, he's got all these stories about taking his kids across the country on a, you know, a tandem huge trailer machine, you know, 22 feet of bike all tied together and all that. But also like when we met him and he came in to do a show with us, he was also talking about how, you know, his kids are getting to the point where they're all in high school and they want cars and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's I guess everybody will need to kind of navigate those waters. And, you know, you have strongly held beliefs about, you know, about transportation, about how the bicycle is a more efficient machine. It's a better solution for getting around town. It's good for your health. But at the same time, there's all this cultural cachet around the car. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think it's important to know how to drive, but not necessary. And, you know, but if she, I mean, my parents gave me a car when I left my house, but it was a car that they'd had for a while. And that was sort of my dad's thing. I'm going to give you a car and a computer. And these are two tools you're going to need. He didn't give us money and he, you know, didn't pay for college and didn't do those things. And my husband has a completely different experience where his parents said, well, you need a car, you'll earn some money for it. So we'll have to kind of, you know, we got 6 years at least to figure that out.
Maybe
we won't live here. You know, maybe we live somewhere else where, it won't be as important to her self-image.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope for the day when bikes are at least as sexy as cars are and that everybody wants them, you know, with the same passion that they want their car and their driver's license. But, you know, until then, we'll see how things go.
You know, speaking of cars and bikes, I there's the second Yubas at the bike shop, and my husband the other day says, oh, we should just go get it. You know, he's probably going to sell it at a discount or at his cost, and he wants to get it out of the store. It's taking up space. Nobody else wants it. We should go get it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, but it looks the exact same like ours. Like, it's the same bike, and I wish he would have bought it in a different color. And I said, I never felt that way about cars. Like, you could know, I know, you know, 10 people who drive the exact same minivan that I have, and I think it's really cool they have the exact same minivan. But then I look at someone who has the exact same bike that we have, and I'm like, oh, you know, I want something more unique in my bicycle, and I don't really care about the car. So,
right.
Maybe that's just me.
Well, but we'll have to send you some stickers so you can cover the second bike with Sprocket Podcast advertising.
I would be I'd like to find out how many people have heard of Sprocket Podcast over here in West Virginia.
Right. I'm curious as well. I know we usually have, I'm guessing, like, you know, after a couple of weeks, we usually have about 300 downloads or something like that. But we're always looking for more people who are interested in hearing people's stories and what people have to say. So
you have a very diverse show. And that was what attracted me to your show, because it wasn't like opening a bicycle magazine and you feel like, I don't have a clue what these people are talking about. You had, you know, like I said, things I was interested in, and mothers and fathers and children and people who were in advocacy and in government and people who were, you know, home brewing and living local and everything. You just had a real good gamut.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. It's good to connect with people. And I feel like, honestly, the reason that we've been able to go as far as we have, like, we're about a year in or more. And I think we've got plenty of fodder for more shows, but that's because we haven't limited ourselves to, you know, like one aspect of cycling or something. Our paradigm is at least as diverse, I think, as the paradigm of all of our listeners. And we've got lots of interests and different ways trying to figure out, you know, how do we reimagine life, and how do we make it enjoyable in a newer, more sustainable way, you know? And there's a lot of pieces to that. So,
yes, it's very relatable.
Oh, well, thanks. And this is the point at which I'll have to cut out some of that stuff so it doesn't sound like I'm just shamelessly self-promoting. But thank you so much for the thank you. I'm really glad that it works for you. What are some of the most important things you'd like to communicate to people as they're maybe trying to follow in your footsteps?
I've got big feet, but
so do I.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess what I'm doing is I'm just trying to figure it all out as I go and make the best intentional choices that I can and do what's good for us and good for everyone else. And I always am trying to help other people, and I never want people to feel as lonely as I have felt throughout this whole thing. Mm. I don't want people to think they can't do it. I want to find a way for them to be able to. And I'm always here to help make those connections if I can with people in the community and elsewhere, because my entire cycling community here is extremely small. I've got two friends who bike with us. But my cycling community online is endless. And the Liz Canning's Cargo Bike documentary, which I think I had mentioned to you, has been a wealth of resources. And I feel so, I don't know, they're surrounded by like-mindedness, but also people who are trying to do the best they can elsewhere, and knowing that it's happening everywhere makes the world feel smaller. And then I've got these blog connections, which I never expected. Like, I started writing because I couldn't find people who were of our family size, living in a town our size, in a culture like ours, and riding bikes. So I sort of reached out to several different bloggers about what they were doing and how they were doing it, and getting their advice. And now it's like, I feel like I could walk into their homes and put my feet up on their coffee table and, you know, share coffee with them. But that's been surprising, but it's also intimidating because they're strangers.
Right. Yeah. So the internet's the great connector, great web of strangers that all kind of come together.
So yeah, I'm trying to be that person for some people, especially locally. It's very important to me that Huntington knows they can do this, because I believe for so long they didn't think they could. So.
Well, we're proud of you for being out there, and what you're doing is absolutely phenomenal, especially for, you know, the national average and the average expectations that most people have in U.S. cities. So any place where there are a small group of hardworking people out there trying to change their own lifestyle and trying to model that and make examples of that for others, we're just thrilled to hear about that. So thanks very much.
Absolutely, Brock. So you guys have been doing this for a year or so?
Yeah, the program, we started doing this in my housemate and co-host Brandon's bedroom. We sat down in November of 2010. And he and I had kind of kicked the idea back and forth a couple times, like, hey, what if we just sat down, you know, and cracked a few beers and just talked about what we really like about bicycling and simple living and that sort of thing. And so we tried it out and it was fun. And we started getting people to come in, so it wasn't just the two of us, and expanding our subjects and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, it's about a year and a half, I think, now that we've been going at it.
That's awesome. And you're in Portland, you said, right?
Right. Portland, Oregon.
Nice. Yeah, well, Portland, Maine. Yeah, okay.
Well, my in-laws live in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was hoping to, last time we were there, to hop up to Portland and actually see the other one, but so far I have not. So someday, I have no idea if there's anything, you know, particularly exciting, but I've also never been to Maine, so.
Right. Yeah, my husband interviewed at Bar Harbor, Maine, and came back very excited, but also the town was extremely small, liberal, vegan, like the cafeteria, the college, you know, vegan menu. And he's like, I don't think we're going to survive there in the winter.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's, it's farther north, I think, than we are, at least, you know, on the on the parallels. And so, it's probably probably very harsh winters.
Yeah. I would imagine so. I don't know. I like winter. That's my favorite season. And I'm really upset that the first day of spring is 85 degrees here. that's depressing to me. I don't know if you knew, we lived in Washington for a couple of years.
Oh, you did. I might have stumbled across. Like I said, I haven't actually done too much reading on your site yet. I'd like to dig in someday. But yeah, Washington State in like the Seattle, like the Puget Sound area or elsewhere?
No, we lived in Pullman.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, we lived in Pullman for 2 years and regretfully left. But
okay. You liked it a lot?
We loved it. It's one of those things, we were there and we come back east for home, like for holiday, and we were homesick for Washington.
Yeah.
And then one summer when we were out there, we had friends who were doing an internship in Tillamook, so we came through Portland.
There you go. And Tillamook is a beautiful spot as well. Did you get the cheese factory tour while you were there?
That's where he was working.
There you go.
Yeah, so they live in Boise now. But, we have some good friends in Washington. I have a good friend that lived here in Huntington who lives in Portland now in, I guess, Beaverton.
Oh, okay.
She's got three kids. I keep saying, I'm swear I want to come out and see you, but, you know, how it goes. No, but we stopped. I don't know what year it was because I'm terrible with dates. It must have been 8 years ago. The Portland Brewery Festival. And we have this cup from going to the brewery festival in Portland.
Okay, yeah. Was that in Pioneer Square? Was that one of those big downtown events?
It was down by the river.
Oh, okay, the waterfront park.
Yeah, and there's a fountain there or something like that. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but we were very impressed because the 8 years ago, there were these places to plug your electric cars in on the street.
Yeah, I remember when I first moved here for school, that was one of the first things I noticed about downtown was that there was this electric car charging port. And I, at the time, had a 1973, just, you know, heavy as shit sort of Dodge Dart. And I really wanted to convert it into an electric vehicle, but I never had the money and it never would have been practical. So I'm actually glad I landed on bikes eventually instead.
Right. Yeah. Bikes are an unlikely thing. Oh, it's interesting. So, well, thanks for your time.
Certainly. Well, hey, like I said, say hello to the family and you keep on doing the good stuff you're doing. I'm really stoked to hear about things happening all over the place. And Liz Canning's documentary, I haven't looked into that since I first heard about it. Is it complete or is she still working on it?
She is still working on it. She's still taking interviews. Video from all over. And my husband and I, when he went to New York City, he interviewed George Bliss from Hub. Bicycle on film. He met up with a woman who had purchased a custom trike from George and did test rode that, and she took video of him. He went in and met some guy that was on the Facebook page, the RPM Facebook page, and said, anytime we travel, we tell people where we're going and we bring our cameras and say, we would be really happy to meet up with you and get some interview for Liz, some film footage for Liz. So he was able to do at least three interviews in New York City on that trip.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing this when it's all said and done. Because, I mean, just the idea of an open source documentary where people just send in their own video footage is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, she's doing something that I'm hoping is really going to reach those people who are not biking. That, you know, the guy down the street who has never owned a bike or hasn't ridden one since he was a kid might look at this and say, oh, wow, you know, there's something here, there's something interesting. I don't know. And it's such an unlikely, I love that bikes can cross all sorts of boundaries and lines and do things that, you know, precious metals and stones and music can't do.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the great connecting points. Like that when I go out on a bike ride here in Portland, and there are a few organized rides that I've been able to take part in, yeah, it's people that I would never meet otherwise, and people that I probably don't even have a lot of the same interests as they do, but we're there, we're on bikes, and we're having a good time, you know, riding through the city together. And it is amazing how much of a connection you can get over that. So
that's what I'm always amazed by too, that it's a bike. Wow. It has that power. This is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the nice things I think is that, if you have just a little bit of if you have to work for your place on the road, you know, if it's not just assumed, like you're not in Amsterdam or Copenhagen, if you have to work on just a little bit, making yourself, seen on the road, being assertive, there is a certain, I think, camaraderie that comes along with that. Like when you see someone else on a bike, you automatically say, yeah, you know exactly what I'm going through. And maybe that's one of the big bonding things.
And that might be it. Yeah.
And just one last question before you go. Have you guys ever done bike camping?
No, it's on our list of things to do.
Okay.
We've had two families here who said, hey, I've been thinking about bike camping. I said, oh, wait, stop that thought until we can all get it together, because we'd like to go with you and see what happens. As far as being able to leave our house and go camping, there's some limited places, but that's one of our challenges right now. Finding a bike rack to hold a long tail bike.
Right. That is kind of tricky.
It's very tricky. So once we can solve that problem, we could take our bike elsewhere and go camping. But we have some rails to trails programs out in the middle of the state in the mountains. But yeah, here, that's one of those little things. I'm like, oh, there's this place 10 miles away. But the roads, like I have called the bike shops and posted information saying, how do you guys feel about this? There's only two ways to get to this place. Mm-hmm. And is it safe for children? And everybody comes back and says, I would never take my kids on that road.
Yeah. And it's a big difference between going as an adult on your bike with your own stuff and going with a bunch of kids. So, yeah, I can understand.
So that's been our challenge. Like, how do we get to these places to go camping? So now I'm back to like, well, we could just take our camping gear to our friend's house on the other side of town and camp in the backyard.
That's not a bad start. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what it is for me. It's all these little steps.
Like, right.
What can we do next? So yeah, we'll see. But bike camping's on my list. I just read Travis Whitworth's doing that Transportland.
Yeah. That's a brand new thing.
It is new, and I was reading his Transportland bike camping blog post this week, and I was like, look what they did, but they didn't bring their kids. Mm-hmm. So I would be really – he has four kids too.
Yeah. Have you heard – have you heard
really the –
oh, sorry. Go for it.
No, it's okay.
I was just going to ask, have you heard the recap of our Crater Lake bike tour from last year I don't remember. It was sometime in late August that we released that.
What was it called?
It was one of the Sprocket episodes, and it might have just been Crater Lake. I can't remember. Anyways, we did that with a family of four, two young girls and trailers, and so that was pretty exciting. But yeah, there's some inspirational grist there.
Yeah, no, I'd like to check it out because that's and then, you know, following Pedal Power Family, you know.
Oh yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, so it's all. It's all, I keep telling my husband, I meditate on things for a long time. I like to think about it and read about it and see how everybody else is doing it. And then if I don't see anything that's, you know, in line with what we're doing, I just do it myself anyway.
There you go. Yeah. You just kind of let it all settle into place and then go for it.
It does. And it's interesting because my husband thinks I'm a big procrastinator because I wait till the absolute last minute to do anything. But I realize that I have some of the best ideas at the last minute because I've spent all that time letting it all meld together.
Right, right. You're the synthesizer and he's the safety conscious one. It all works together in a beautiful picture.
Captain Safety, that's me.
There we go. Well, thank you again, and have a good one, Stacey. We'll look forward to perhaps connecting with you guys sometime again. And it's asimple6.com is your website.
Yes, it is.
You're on Facebook and Twitter. And go ahead and say that again. I won't interrupt you so I can get your voice saying it.
Asimple6.com.
There we go. And then, of course, say a hello and a thank you to Brent as well, and all your kids. And we'll look forward to connecting in the future. If you ever do make it out to Portland, we'd love to chat with you guys. So,
absolutely, thank you very much.
Definitely. Well, we will we'll talk to you soon. In the time that's elapsed since our interview, the family A-Simple Six has, in fact, taken a bike camping trip. And we've got links to that, to the Transport Land episode of Cargo Bike Camping, and links to our own adventures bike camping with the family down towards Crater Lake as Team Sincerity. That was the title. We've got that posted on our website at thesprocketpodcast.com. Well, that's it for today. You can send us your feedback about the program, suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks. Please write to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us your voicemail or send us a text message at 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. You can find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And until next time, stay simple, and we will see you on another Sprocket Podcast.